Get a computer repair business website up and running, starting from scratch, even if you don't know anything about website design. Check out the new Tech Site Builder 2. Save 20% by going to techsitebuilder.com/Linux.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux The Rest of Us, episode 129. This podcast is about Linux, all things Linux, software, hardware, all sorts of awesome Linux news, tips, and tricks. I am your host, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am blessed every single week to be accompanied by my good friend, the Linux maven, door-to-door geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Dor?
Going better. Much better than last week. Kids are healthy. I'm as healthy as I'm going to get for being, you know, I don't want to say grossly overweight, even though my doctor might, but healthy enough. I'll say that.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, I myself am realizing my health limitations and doing some things about it, but that's a whole other podcast that I'm never going to start.
Yeah, I wouldn't listen to it either. Aww. And I will say, I got to say, it is not 420 today's date, but it is an epic day. One of the people I loved communicating with during his learning process, and I know you never stop learning, whatever, but he seemed to learn a lot, and to where I don't really get that many questions from him anymore. Ryan Ridenour is in our live chat, who he's never able to come to the live chat because he's always busting his hump, working, supporting family, and being in a band and supporting a band. So he's in the live chat, so I gotta try to make sure we do good tonight.
Well, congratulations, Ryan. Glad to see you can make it.
Yeah, and I'll say, technically speaking, Ryan doesn't need any of this kind of help because he owns his own website hosting design site, Mad Monkey Hosting. But if he didn't, he might need some help making a computer website because he's getting tired of fixing his friends and family's computers all the time and not making any money off of it. Every technician starts out at a very unknowing base of where to start. You know, you can join Podnuts, you can join the Podnuts forums, you can join the Podnuts Lounge IRC, and you can ask a lot of questions and you can learn a lot of stuff in a short amount of time. One of the things I heavily suggest all those people starting out is to first and foremost get a web presence. And the easiest, honest way to do that right now is if you go to techsitebuilder.com/Linux, you'll be supporting the show and getting this product that not only helps you get a website up quickly, easily customized, but it also has in there a lot of information about SEO and AdWords. How to make the most of that, how to optimize how many people see your site and how many people follow through after seeing your site to contact you to get service. It's the kind of thing that you could definitely learn on your own, but it's time versus money. How long is it going to take you to learn all of this stuff versus just paying a one-time fee and having a guy basically hold your hand and get it all set up and finalized? So I really do encourage people, especially those who want to get into the business, don't think of the upfront cost, think of the long-term value you gain from a product like this.
Could not agree more. It's basically get out of your own way. I could speak from my experience as a tech. I put off getting a site for way too long, bought his first kit. The very first job I got from that paid for the fee and more. So if you guys do want to get a great discount, Steve is actually offering our listeners a 40% discount. Go to, like Dor said, techsitebuilder.com/Linux and check it out. You will not be disappointed.
All right. And that was a free advert because Steve is a friend of the network. And when I say he's a friend of the network, he is the friend of the network. Any way Podnuts can ever help Steve, we will always go out of our way to help. But this is another one. Unpaid advertisement. MadMonkeyHosting.com. This will also be in the notes. Ryan does what a lot of other people already do, which is basically just offer websites, offer custom designs. The difference is you're talking to somebody, you're dealing with somebody, you're doing business with somebody who has honest to goodness passion, and he understands everybody's offering this kind of stuff, and customer service and satisfaction is how he tries to separate himself from the herd, dare I say. So I honestly encourage people, if you need a shared hosting plan or if you need custom themes for your site, I highly encourage you, madmonkeyhosting.com. I understand no one is going to be able to beat prices of the big boys, but you got to remember, what you're not paying for by saving that money is stuff like customer service. I personally would rather pay a little bit more and get customer service. So I really like Ryan. Ryan's been very nice to the Podnuts Network in the past by just helping us, talking with us, sending in email questions, hitting me on Google Talk, asking me questions, and just saying, hi, how's everything going? Heard your kid was sick, kind of thing. So I definitely also want to do anything possible to help out Ryan.
Very cool. Could not agree more. And I got to tell you, when I think of Mad Monkey, I think of a chimp running around an office with a machete, which has always brought a smile to my face. I don't quite think that's how he runs his organization, but there's only one way to find out.
There is. I'll say, whenever I think of it, I kind of think of like a Mad Dog's mad brother, like his really upset brother.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that the one that has 20/20 vision?
Apparently, perfect vision.
Ugh.
Okay, there is no basic. I basically just wanted to do a little bit of a rant and a little bit of like a life lesson kind of thing. We all have a lot of stuff on our plate. Technically speaking, we all have too much stuff to do every day. We all need more time. I think we all need to just once in a while take a breath, relax, and go over our priorities, reevaluate, recompute, rediagnose, if you will, what should actually come first. You know what I mean? I still remember vividly enough to remember you talking about the guy on the stage. And he put a bunch of big rocks in a jar and asked, was it full? Then he put small rocks in, is it full? Then he put sand in, is it full? Then he put in water, is it full? And that's basically making sure you do the big things first. Not mm-hmm. the first things first, because, you know, there's an endless amount of first things first. But the big things first, the things with the most impact first. So that's what I am going to be doing here, as well as I can, I'll say. Here's a couple things I want Podnuts to have done, and this is going to be a Podnuts thing, because in case no one is aware of as of yet, I now own the Podnuts Network. And it did not come for free. Okay, I will say that. It came at a, what some people might say, exorbitant price. What some people might say, I got it a steal. Either way, it's a little bit of money that has to be done. There's a lot of things that I think I would want done with this network. You know what I mean? A lot of things. Way too many things, in fact. But I want to worry about the big things. The big things is content. 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 Not necessarily me. Content either. That's one of the big things. This is no way a selfish network where I insist on being on everything, for because that doesn't mean it's good. You know, my name's not, sorry to say, but Leo Laporte, when he first started Twit, he had to be on every show. And I think he had to be just to make them successful. I don't think that's the case with Podnuts. And I want to make sure when we go to a fest, we properly represent and we have time to meet with as many people as possible and talk about the network, talk about the shows, give them merchandise, hopefully. Here's the thing I mentioned in the Podnuts forum today. I've had more than a couple people in the last months report spam. And they do it the proper way. In a PHP BB, there's a way you can look at a posting, click a button, and report spam. It's one click, okay? It's one little click. Most people don't take the time to put that one click in to let me know they're spam. It speedens the process of me getting rid of crap off that bulletin board. And I want to say thank you. So once I get merchandise better lined up, i.e. lined up at all, I would really like to once a month or so offer whoever has reported the most spam and is posting legitimate content, I'd like to offer them. Would you like a mug? Would you like stickers? Would you like a t-shirt? Would you like this? Would you like that? And just send them stuff to show thank you for supporting this network. There's a lot of ways to support Podnuts. And some people go out of their way to help me in those forums, and I want to make sure they're thanked as well. I want to make sure anybody who supports the show gets thanked. And that should be a priority. That should be a big rock. You know, because without these people, there is no Podnuts. I am not Podnuts. It is a community. And those guys helping me fight spam are just as important as everybody else in this Podnuts.
Mm-hmm. You know? No, the help that we get from the community, the content, the praise, everything, it's all much appreciated, and it just helps all of us be better. I can say that. So yeah, we do have some things lined up that are happening soon. Let's just say that that with the acquisition, it is growing. Dor has a lot of great ideas. He has some people close to him, myself included, that are helping contribute some ideas, and let's just say there's a lot of good stuff coming, a lot of good stuff, and there'll be some announcements soon.
Well, yeah, and I'll say me, Cody, and Tracy Holtz are trying to do a lot of stuff behind the scenes. This is in no shape, way, or form a negative statement I'm going to say. Cody has a job. Cody has a wife. Cody has kids. Cody has a life. Cody has a wife. Cody has a job. Cody has... Tracy has a farm. Tracy has other businesses. Tracy has a lot of things going on. I have a 9-to-5. I have a family. I have a lot of other stuff going on too. It's taken us three with our limited amount of time we have to come close to what Steve C. did. If anyone believes all he did was just show up at his computer, hit record, and then hit publish when he was done, and that's all he did for Podnuts. Let me tell you something. You people are very sadly mistaken. He spent a good amount of time building stuff up, doing a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. So I tip my hat to him, and I definitely thank Cody and Tracy and guys like Kevin Wisher, Jeff Owens, Knucklehead Tech, all these other guys who are also trying to step up and help me. I'm taking the process slow because I don't want people to overburden themselves. I really don't want people to overburden themselves. Give as little as you possibly can, and then next month, if you can give a little bit more, that's great. But just give a little, and we will, as a team, get a lot of stuff working smoothly, but it's taking a little bit longer than I expected. But we're getting there. We're definitely getting there.
I don't know. Yeah. Stuff's getting done. We're doing good. It's coming along.
Yep. Yeah. And like this show, this past week's show, got published like less than 24 hours, I think, before we're here tonight. Mm. And really, I'd say to the public, there's no reason for that. There's no reason for that. It should have, could have, would have been published 24 hours after we recorded last week. Priorities. It comes back to priorities, and I got to make sure we handle this stuff correctly. And thankfully, Cody stepped up and he got us a trial subscription at
Basecamp.
Thank you. Could not remember to save my life.
Which is a fantastic organizational tool for getting team collaboration together, and it's doing wonders. We've gotten more done in the last couple weeks, I would say, as far as getting things nailed down.
And I'll say, to sound like a bad Hollywood movie, at least it's a quote-unquote board we have that we can pin stuff in.
Yep.
At least it's that. At least it's a formal, here's stuff we got to get done. This relies on that. We need to get this done. This relies on that. And we at least we're now starting to see the wall forming of all the stuff that we want to get done and we need to get done. So we got to separate the things we want to get done to the things we have to get done. You know, and we're definitely doing that. And to be honest, it's a little bit of fun only because organization to me is a new thing. I'm learning how to spell it better every day. I'll say that. first I want to talk about it real quick. And if people out there are genuinely upset at what I just did, went on 20 minute, whatever rant about podnuts.com, you too can go to podnuts.com/survey and let me know how you feel. There's an open survey there. I ask people to answer as much or as little as you want. Again, between us people, I would like to take a random person from that who gives us feedback and send them a shirt or stickers or something just to show someone thanks for taking the time to fill out that survey. I have a correction for last week.
Oh, okay.
One of the things I commented on was OwnCloud and how people need to test it, need to play with it. And I said you could go to Turnkey Linux and download a LAMP stack and put OwnCloud on it. Well, once again, Turnkey Linux has made it even easier, okay? They have a pre-configured downloadable virtual hard disk or a live CD of OwnCloud. So in one click, you download a file, you open up VirtualBox, and if you download the virtual hard disk, you basically go new, virtual machine, Linux-based, Ubuntu, and then on the next one where you select the hard drive, you select existing hard drive, and you pick what you downloaded. And voila, in a minute or two, it takes you through a couple questions. What do you want the root password to be? What do you want the OwnCloud password to be? What do you want the SQL password to be? And do you want to do updates? And I believe that's it. And bang, you have yourself your own OwnCloud instance to play with. I don't believe it's truly up to date versus going to OwnCloud and downloading, but it's the most up to date supported by Ubuntu. So what you're getting is something solid. And it starts in like a quote-unquote headless mode where it just ends up in a boot where it just pulls up a screen that tells you a couple addresses. What's the IP address for you to access the OwnCloud? If you want to do PHP MyAdmin and edit the manage the database, you can go here. Or if you want to do a secure shell over the network, open up your web browser, go here, and voila, you have a command line interface to that VM. I am getting sick, literally sick to my stomach, of everybody touting Google Drive, touting Dropbox, touting Box.com, touting this new one, I think it's called Sync.com, that's offering 50 gigabytes of space. Ooh, you can get up to 50 gigs or something. And then you can use SkyDrive. You can use all these things. I'll just say again, people, have we learned nothing from Google Reader? Have we learned nothing? I mean, so this kid put his hand in this fish tank and it got bitten off by a shark. Doesn't mean I can't stick my hand in this fish tank. You know, I'll just say like this, how dumb do we have to be to just continue walking off the edge of a cliff like lemmings? We have the perfectly easy, simplistic mechanism to own our own cloud storage with desktop syncing clients, with Android syncing clients, with as much storage as we can afford in our house. And we still go towards third-party companies. Stupefied, confused, upset. It's everything. I can't understand why people keep gravitating towards these other sources. There's one thing we should have also learned is we basically can't trust companies. Companies are out for their interest, not our interest.
Well, let me stop you there real quick. Along with what you're saying, we can't trust companies to keep offering a service for free, I will say, as an extension and a more exact point you were trying to make. And furthermore, if you were really relying on Google Reader, I mean, if you think about it, that was just delivering your news in a more digestible form to you every day. If you're talking about your offsite backup, chances are that's your, you know, personal photos, your tax files, your any sort of image backups you have for your business stuff that your life relies on, something that your business relies on. So, but you know, Dor, I think what would get people to use OwnCloud more or services like it would be an instructional video.
Oh.
Well,
okay. I was going to say if it offered free porn, maybe it would get more traffic, but okay, I'm with you. Okay.
And if you need to host that video content, try madmonkeyhosting.com. Yeah, yeah. But if someone were to release on another instructional video, one of many inside a set of videos about maybe, I don't know, furthering your personal Linux education, don't you think that would be beneficial?
It would have to be. And the one part of the segment of the population that really, really stupefies me to no end for not picking up on this is groups of people supporting small businesses and enterprise. I mean, you could have the IT staff, the executive staff, the office staff, the PR staff, all have their own instance of OwnCloud where it's super easy for them to save their files and share with coworkers kind of thing. And they don't have to worry about Dropbox handing over the data, Dropbox locking them out, you know, Dropbox sniffing in on your network. You don't have to worry about any of that. I can't understand why enterprises, especially small businesses also, aren't leeching onto this like a calf and to their mama's cow udder or thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have to ask Dude Man for an explanation of that. But it truly is awesome, and it's gotten better. It is awesome right now. It was awesome 6 months ago. It's getting awesomer. It's really a truly epically cool application to have on your server and play with. And I'll say in conjunction with that, if you go to, I believe it is, no-ip.org. Nah, I'm sorry, noip.com is what it is. DynDNS, DynDNS used to offer this. DynDNS is no longer DynDNS. It is now DYN.com, and they offer zero free service. They offer you nothing to get you in the door. With DynDNS, I can have a virtual machine running on this box, to my right, with this OwnCloud instance. I can open up a single port on my router and point it to this IP address of this VM. I can go to noip.com and register for my personal owncloud.noip.org. And voila, anywhere is accessible in the world. Again, I don't have to worry about relying on a third-party company to do anything. So with a little bit of collaboration between this and other tools that are free to us, we can enjoy enterprise grade hosting service for files and calendars and sharing services ourselves. And I will say I got that tip from Black Hammer because I was trying to get DynDNS, and I said, dude, I don't see any more free service. What am I doing wrong? And Black Hammer said, no, you do not want to go there. Go to noip.com. So again, Black Hammer, tip my hat. You again saved me.
Well, how about this, Dor? Because I got to tell you, you've been praising OwnCloud for a long time. You've been using it yourself as of late. And it's something I've been telling myself, you know, I really should give that a try, but I just haven't. Why don't we, next week's show, we already have planned out, we're having a special guest. Stay tuned for that. But the week after, why don't, in between now and then, you help me, let's say at the max 3 weeks from now, hopefully week after next, you help me set up, because I just found a machine in my garage that I can use if I need to use a physical machine. Help me set up my own. We could do a hangout one night, help me get it set up, and then I can report back in a segment on a future show just to let everyone know how easy it was.
Right. Well, I'll still suggest, even on a beige box you have that doesn't need to do anything else, install a minimal operating system and then install VirtualBox and use this VM for your own cloud instance just because it's migratable. In enterprises, for instance, that one of the best benefits they have to VMs is if that hardware fails, they just move the VM to a different box and it's running back fine.
That's
I honestly don't like tying any kind of these kind of things to an isolated box in our own houses when we don't have to. There are some benefits to running in a VM, and there are some losses from running in a VM. In the end, I personally believe the pros heavily outweigh the cons, heavily outweigh, because you can essentially have a 100 gig drive, take 10 gig or 20 gig for the host OS, and designate the rest of it to own cloud. And as long as you have a drive that big or bigger, you can easily transfer that VM all around your network on all kinds of different boxes, and you don't have to worry about nothing. If it was a physical install, you would literally have to migrate the database and migrate the files. You would basically need to be a server admin if that box dies and you wanted to move it. We shouldn't have to be server admins. Virtual appliances allow us to not have to do that. So I have no problem with that. The only thing I have to figure out is how to dynamically expand the size of the VirtualBox image after boot up, because right now I think it's stuck at like 4 gigs, I want to say 3 gigs. So you just have to expand it, and that should not be a hard process. It really shouldn't be, but I'll look into it. When I have that figured out, then we can move forward.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll only be reminding you about it every day, rubbing my hands together
on Basecamp, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And then we can have emails from Mad Monkey Hosting to me every day saying,
there we go.
Yeah. Well, and there's one more thing I wanted to talk about with turnkey Linux. Okay. It literally is a playground. Okay. If you don't agree with me when I say that, and you don't understand what I mean by that when I say that, don't listen to this podcast, please. Okay. Everything on this podcast is essentially for enjoyment. Okay. Because we enjoy tinkering, playing, discovering, learning, these kind of things. Google Reader died off. I doubt Google Docs will ever die off. Ever. Because there's a lot of states, there's a lot of governments, there's a lot of businesses paying a lot of money to Google to keep that service up and running.
And the fact that they, especially in our time in Cambridge a couple weeks ago, they are advertising the heck out of it, especially in universities, as an alternative to Microsoft Office. I mean, we're talking full-on, you know, TV advertisements, video banners, huge, huge banners, basically everywhere we walked. So
that's right.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere for a while.
Yeah. And,
for sure.
And don't get me wrong. It is a fantastic tool to be on a browser. It's not accessible for like Jonathan, which to me is a huge failing about it. But for everyone else, I'll say it is a fantastically dynamic tool that you can use. I'm 99% sure Office Live 365 does not have the real-time collaboration like Google Docs does. It does have a collaboration and it tries to make it real-time. But if you do a head-to-head comparison, you will see Google Docs is actually real time. Live 365 is actually not. It's actually delayed sometimes up to 3 minutes between changes back and forth. But I can believe Google at some point in time would extremely strip down the free features or make it part of the license that you cannot use it in a business. The free version, you have to get the paid version. I definitely think it's possible. Whether or not it happens or not, I don't know. But there are other alternatives out there. There's LibreOffice and some other company, I cannot remember, are working on free alternatives for this. And free as in capital F free, and free as in lowercase free, all around. There is one that is already out there, okay? This company was purchased by Google like a year ago. But it was free software before that, so once it was purchased, it was basically forked. And now it's called Etherpad Lite, And that is also another turnkey appliance. So if you want to play with owning your own live document collaboration server, you don't need to go through a lot of work and be a network administrator. You can simply go to Turnkey Linux, look for Etherpad Lite, Etherpad Lite, Lite. Download this VM, hard drive, boot up VirtualBox, new Linux, Ubuntu-based, existing hard disk, point it towards a download, boom. Exact same interface when it's done booting. What's the root password? What's this password? What's that password? Do you want to do updates? Exact same steps. It finishes, gives you a screen. Open this in your web browser. You can access the interface. Open this in your browser. You can have a secure shell. I mean, it literally is a uniform experience. The only difference is the end result, where in one you get own cloud, in this one you get a online document collaboration tool. So there's another one I really encourage people to play with. And this does one thing by default Google Docs does not do, and it makes me upset Google doesn't do it. I edit a document with Kodi. Over time, I literally have no idea who made what edits. Mm-hmm. Unless I go file, see history, and go back through history. By default, in Etherpad Lite, each new user on the document has their own background color on their text. So as soon as I hit the server and I start typing, my background might be orange. I can change it, and it will change everything I did. But then when Kodi connects, he will not be orange. He might be yellow or blue. You know what I mean? And then he can change it to what he wants, or if he wants, and then he can have all his background. So it's super absurdly easy and quick to see who did what. I don't know why Google doesn't have that by default, but they don't.
And I got to say, if you're trying to think of a good reason to have a feature like that, I could say that back in the day when I was doing writing projects with a partner of mine, it was fiction and screenwriting. It was essential to know who made what changes or who corrected this piece of dialogue or whatever. And to do that, we had to make little notes. And there wasn't anything like this to do that. If you're collaborating on projects, like we were talking about earlier, just to be able to see who's injecting ideas into a document like that is a worthwhile option to have. And to have it not available in something huge like Google Docs is, yeah, a bit, it's like, why not?
Right. And I mean, I understand the appeal with all the Google services. I really do. They have like zero downtime. Like, I mean, when was the last time you went to any Google property and it said, sorry, we're temporarily down for maintenance?
Yeah, no. But much like we've spoken about before, what if you, I mean, especially, you know, let's say your business is completely reliant upon Google Docs and all of your stuff is backed up to Google Drive. Well, what if it does go down for a couple hours one day, you know, for whatever reason, right, through whatever possibility of that happening?
Well, or your password got hacked and they changed the password. Or Google decided they didn't like what you were putting on there. They might have considered it, well, it looked like pirated content to us. I mean, there's a whole lot of bad things that technically can happen. Granted, it isn't common that they happen, but if your business needs this up and running, I understand people being hesitant to rely on it. So why do it? And at the same token, don't rely on hosted Exchange servers. Same thing can happen. Rely on yourself. You know what I mean? There's nobody to blame. When something goes wrong, you point at yourself. It was your fault. You know, you forgot to pay the Comcast bill, so you can't access this. You know, at least that you have control over, I'll say. And I will say, I know I said a couple times you don't have to be a network administrator to do this kind of stuff, but I still want to let people know of ways network administrators can, quote-unquote, audit their operating system. The name of the article is over at HowToForge, Options for User Auditing on Linux Platforms. By auditing, they basically mean examine the operating system, examine the logs, and see what users are doing, when they're doing, how they're doing, kind of thing. It's actually kind of cool, I'll say. It gives you a little bit of insight on how everything in Linux is a text file and how you can scrape certain directories for certain key-like words and see what's going on your computer. I actually encourage newer Linux users to go to the site and basically go through this, look at it, and try a couple of these on your own box, your own desktop computer, to see, I did run sudo the other night when I installed, Python or Vimeo or, something else. You can literally look back in time at, when your computer was asked to escalate access or when someone logged into a computer and things like that. And these are the exact same tools and mechanics used on actual business-grade servers, because in the end, Linux is Linux is Linux. I mean, technically speaking, some of these commands could probably be ran on your Android device because at the core, it's Linux. So I just thought this was a cool bit of insight for the desktop user to see how things are captured on your Linux box and how some people choose to examine that kind of information.
No, yeah, I'm just checking out the link, and I'm definitely bookmarking that for later use.
Yeah, well, this is the exact kind of article I literally bookmark for later. Because I know right now, technically, I don't need it. But in a year, let's say, hypothetically, my son is a little bit older, a little bit wiser, a little bit craftier, and a little bit, let's say, more mischievous. I would like to be able to audit his computer and see what he's doing. I'll just say that, because seriously, I'm going to tell my son, of course I'm spying on you. That's my computer. That ain't your computer. I bought that computer. You're not accessing the internet on something you own. I own that. Right. So yes, I'm going to be occasionally looking out and seeing what kind of stuff I see. So, if, you know, and if you do want to do stuff that I don't, that I shouldn't know about, come tell me. Dad, tonight, yeah, Don't look at the logs. I won't. The more honest he is with me, the more honest I'll be with him. And that's my goal, was being a dad, except for I want him to think I'm crazy. I'm also going for that angle, because sooner or later he's going to be able to kick my butt.
This reminds me, I'll tell you a quick story with a customer I had. She wouldn't let her two teenage boys onto Facebook without knowing their Facebook passwords. And they were basically extensions of, her Facebook account, because she would audit them every day. But all they did was create secondary accounts and then gave her access privileges and then told their friends to just send them messages every once in a while. And then they had their own separate accounts. So yeah, there's always going to be a way around it. What I will say, though, is with great power comes great responsibility.
Okay.
Yes. This tool can be used for good or for evil. Just let your conscience be your guide.
And I'll say this, the day my son figures that out, I'll go buy him a pizza or a new video game and pat him on his head. Good job, son, because you shouldn't let me stop you. You shouldn't think that, dad's going to follow me. You should think of ways around me, because you should be able to beat me in this computer game.
There you go.
Congratulations. Here's a new car.
That's when you grab him and go, son, you're coming to OLF this year.
Next year he's coming to OLF. That's
really?
Oh, yeah. That's already a given. And
very cool.
And after the fest, I want to basically go back up to the room, let him watch some stuff he wants to watch, whatever, yada, yada. But then literally sit there with him and go over some of the stuff he saw, some of the things he learned, some of the things that intrigued him, some of the things he questioned, about everything, about people, personalities, technologies, products, companies, whatever. My goal is to figuratively shove as much in his head as I possibly can.
Very cool.
So when the robot overlords take over, I can push my son and say, there you go, he knows everything. Take him.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that. My wife would. But I wouldn't.
Yeah. I don't think, according to the robot overlord law, you can offer your firstborn. It needs to be your secondborn.
Oh, well, they have no hope then.
Okay.
I'll just say that. I love that boy dearly, but, you know, I'm gonna have a hard time keeping him out of jail when he gets older.
Remember, the internet is forever, Dora. Watch what you say.
He knows it, too. Trust me, he already knows it. He constantly laughs like an evil madman. He was over at my father-in-law's house. I don't know if I told you this. He was over at my father-in-law's house one day last week because I had to go to work. I had to go to work. But he couldn't go into daycare because he had a fever the day before or whatever. My father-in-law turned on Netflix on his computer, and my son sat in front of it, he said, for like 2 hours straight, didn't move. And once in a while, he would, in air quotes, laugh. Okay? My father-in-law's friend came over, and he's sitting in the other room talking to him, and he hears my son, who doesn't laugh like a normal kid, because he's not, he's evil. Okay? He's just sitting there watching the movie, and then all of a sudden, you hear, nah! Ha, ha, and then nothing for like 2 or 3 minutes. And then, and my father-in-law's friend turned to my father-in-law and said, does that kid have Tourette's or something? And then he would just like, cause he would also like just once in a while scream. Funny. Stupid. Okay. Cat. And he literally thought my son had Tourette's. I said, wow. No, he doesn't have Tourette's. He's just crazy.
I got a question for you, though, Dor. If he's in Buffalo, New York, and needs bail money, who should he call?
He should call Big John.
Big John McCarthy, that's right.
Big John McCarthy. And I'll purposely try to steer him south, because John doesn't need that burden on his shoulders.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Now, I wanted to talk about this, even though I've heard some people say some negative things about it. I do believe it's getting better, okay? Open Elect is basically based off of XBMC. Open Elect tries to do a little bit more than XBMC, I'll say that. And I like what kind of extra things they're trying to do. So if people try XBMC and it doesn't completely fill your needs, check out Open Elect. OpenElec. Version 3.0, I believe, just dropped less than a week ago. And I'll say it supports more hardware than ever. And from what I read, I believe it actually supports more hardware than XBMC-based distributions does. This goes a little bit further. I believe they also have greater hardware acceleration support on the Raspberry Pi. Okay. This is growing, in my mind, to be the kind of home entertainment theater PC console delivery mechanism that you can almost run as a live distribution. Literally, just take a USB drive and just walk around the house and go to a different computer, plug it in, and you have the same interface everywhere you go. And because of the hardware acceleration that they're incorporating, you should experience a decent experience on all the computers. If you install it, you'll get an even better performance. I cannot encourage people enough. Windows Media, what was it called? They had the Windows. It was their
XBMC.
No, they had a Windows one that they literally killed off. Windows Media Center.
Yeah. Are you talking about Windows XP like Media Edition or Media Center Edition, something like that?
Yeah, that was killed off. They technically have a Media Center bundle you can now buy. It was supposed to go up to $99 January the 1st, but I still think it's like $49. So not only do you have to worry about getting locked into a license with Windows, you have to buy an extra license, and you have to worry about, is my hardware beefy enough to run an operating system of this magnitude? And I will say, in all honesty, if I tell somebody that my Raspberry Pi has 512 megs of RAM, and by somebody I mean a normaler person than me, they laugh. They're like, what can you run with that kind of RAM? Nothing. Nothing will run with that little bit of RAM. I'm like, dude, Just because Windows wants 2+ gigs and just because Photoshop needs 6 gigs doesn't mean everything needs that kind of RAM, when the opposite is true. Most stuff don't need even close to that amount of RAM to get a reasonable performance out of it.
Yep.
And then I had to show him Linux VPS hosting plans, because one of the sparsities in that market is RAM. Hard disk, you know, hard drives are cheap. Bandwidth is technically cheap. They can offer you large amounts. But when it comes to RAM, that's a finite amount per server rack. So that is expensive. And when you start out with buying VPSs, I want to say it typically starts out at like 128 megs of RAM on a server, because it's Linux. And for most tasks, you don't need a lot of RAM. So there's no reason why a Raspberry Pi, an OpenElect, or XBMC could not rationally be an utterly worthwhile home theater solution for the first world as well. And everybody's eyes will be opened up to this when Mad Dog's Project Kawa launches and becomes successful, because there's no doubt in my mind it will be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As kind of an offshoot of that, real quick, this is something I forgot to throw into the doc, but the very first U.S. seller started selling the Raspberry Pi Model A's this week.
Really?
And they, yeah, and they immediately sold out, like within hours. Just, hey, we're finally able to order them from the United States. Congratulations. And gone. Just gone. And those are the Model A's. Those weren't even Model B's yet.
Yeah, well, I firmly believe it's only a matter of time. Somebody just needs to have a little bit, an ounce, a skosh, a smidge, an inkling of chutzpah, of cojones, of gumption, to just buy as big of a bulk you can of Raspberry Pis, buy as big of a bulk of cases as you can with the Raspberry Pis, put them together, put a sticker on them, put an SD card in them, and sell them as products.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one of the biggest things about the Pi that I think is possible. We've seen companies over in Germany offer dedicated unitasking solutions where it's literally like 12 times the price of a Pi, and they can't keep them in stock enough. I really do feel, especially in this country, where we throw money away on iPads and iPhones and iPads like it's nothing, there's no reason why we couldn't have three of these things in our house at a time, with 99% of the people not understanding it's a $30 device.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they find out, they don't care, because it just does what they want to do. Whether it be home automation, answering machine, PBX type system like Magic Jack, home mm-hmm. theater based system, old school gaming console kind of system. I mean, all these different things. If you streamline the operating system right, you can very easily unitask with this device very affordably, and I'm honestly excited to see it happen, because I believe it will.
Yeah, I still need to order my Model B, and then Cook Technologies is making a Model B case soon.
I heard that
too from Russ the Beast Winner. Watch out for those fists, he's got some mitts on him.
Well, I think we need like a sound effect track now. Whenever we say that, we hear like a growl, like a bear.
Like that, wow, wow, wow.
Yes.
That's perfect. Yeah, then we could totally be morning radio-esque. And then every 15 minutes we'll do weather updates.
Well, but only for Russ.
Only for Russ, yeah.
He's the beast. And he makes terrific beer.
Well, that's true. We'll put it in post this episode. Actually, it could be like one of those. I was just thinking about this for the other day. You remember, like, you were alive in the 80s. You understand this. Like, I remember Burger King did this once on an episode of Different Strokes. They had like a word that was said during the episode, and that's when you had to call in the 800 number to like win a prize. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We need to have something like that with like that beast sound, or we'll have like a sound that'll play almost like Pee Wee's Playhouse.
The magic word of the day.
Right. And everybody's going, I mean, we're not going to go nuts, but we could, we'll have some. We'll work it in somehow. to win a pie. We might as well have them win a pie for something like that. It'll be some complicated thing. It takes you to your website with like a QR code on it to take you to like a DOS server to, I don't know, but we'll,
right.
It'll be a bunch of hoops to jump through. It would have been perfect for an Easter egg hunt if we had planned it correctly, but
yeah. And then you have to watch a Telnet session of Star Wars, A New Hope, and you have to find the Easter egg in there that then leads to another Easter egg. Yeah.
And you have to watch an ASCII version of It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
Clarence? Yes.
I heard the bell.
Exactly. Hey, I'm giving out wings.
Sponsored by Domino's Wings.
Yeah, I will say that's terrible. The kind of... Kate, you just get me off another tangent. I don't care how long this goes tonight. Okay. I started another podcast, and by I started another podcast, I mean I didn't start another podcast. I was asked to be on another podcast. Throwbackreviews.com. Sean Dirty Thumbs, Tummy Ache, Belly Ache, Factory Mouth Johnson wanted to talk. He wanted a podcast where it basically was a couple guys, like, quote unquote, sitting at the end of the bar and BSing about an old movie, an old game, an old television show, an old technology, an old fad, something. Just talking about something from our youth kind of thing. Because the primarily of podcast listeners are approaching 40s, if not in their 40s. That's the majority of people who listen to podcasts. I said, dude, that's a genuinely great idea, okay? We have recorded 3 episodes, 2 have been released. First one was on a movie called Private Eyes, which was Don Knotts and never remember the second guy's
name. Tim Conway.
Thank you. Ridiculous movie. That's what I was going to say. Ridiculous movie. The second episode, Smokey and the Bandit. Dude, that movie was epic, even though it's a cowboy wearing bell bottoms driving a fast car that's an automatic.
But there are 2 words that make all of that make sense, and those 2 words are Burt Reynolds.
Yes. Indeed.
That's all you need.
I'm not happy. And I will say the third episode was on Top Secret. Which I will say that movie unknowingly made me an extreme Val Kilmer fan back in the day, which I kind of lost my luster for him a little bit, but that movie still holds a spot in my heart.
Dude, yeah. I'm gonna throw something out there. I'm gonna be on a future episode too, and we're gonna review one of my favorite 80s films, which Sean told me he was thinking about doing, and then Dora and I were like, oh, I got to be on that show. But yeah, he asked me if I could be on the Top Secret episode, and I was just like, oh my God, because that for me also, like, one of my top 5 80s comedies of all time. There's just so much stuff in there, but it couldn't happen. I cannot wait to listen to that episode though.
Right. So saying all that, you just mentioned It's a Wonderful Life. That is another kind of old movie that would be maybe perfect for that show, because we've all seen it. But we all don't discuss what the movie meant to us, how we remember seeing it for the first time, what we think of it when we see it. I mean, did we catch something in the movie that not everybody else caught, kind of thing? Just a real interesting conversation I'll have with people. And we don't plan on only doing 80s stuff. That's when me, Sean, and Steve Cherbino were coming in with reality with the rest of the universe, okay? Just happened to be the beginning of the 80s. So that's when we remember discovering comedy, discovering horror, discovering all these movies that existed. So the first one kind of, you know, sticks with us. So that's why we tend to focus around that time frame. But we're going to talk about a lot of good stuff. And Dirty Thumbs took it upon himself to do everything involved with that cast. The hosting, the website, the editing, the publication, everything. Mm-hmm. And he will not let me help with anything. He will not. He is dead set against having me or Steve help with anything, which I actually thank him for because I have enough on my plate. But it takes, in my mind, a big man to just say, I'm doing it my all and won't ask for help. Me and Steve will happily tell him when he does something wrong. but he's not asking for help. And I got to say, that is a lot of fun.
It's a great show. Throwback Reviews. See, throwbackreviews.blogspot.com. Check it out.
Yeah, if you go to throwbackreviews.com, it automatically redirects you.
Oh, redirects. Oh, cool, cool, cool. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, there's a couple links that you put in the notes, Cody?
Yes, sir. Of course, we've all heard about Whoopi, which is an application that we can Windows users can use to install Linux on their Windows system, but it is being dropped. Whoopi is being dropped from Ubuntu 13.04, which I don't know how I feel about it. On one hand, I can understand them, you know, reviewing what they're including in their install disks and kind of saying, do we absolutely need this? Because is that an absolute essential? No. But if they take it out of the installation disk, it's going to be one more hurdle for new users who are potentially being guided to Ubuntu to give it a try, aside from just using it in a live environment. I would say that as far as the steps that people would go through, like a brand new user, first would be a live environment. Second might be a Whoopi install, because that way you're effectively dual booting. And then the third would be a secondary drive, kind of like what I do. And then the fourth is just I'm wiping Windows and I'm installing Linux because I'm finally comfortable in it. What do you think about this, Dor?
I think it's stupid. It's utterly stupid for them to drop support for this, but they're dropping support for this, I already know, because they're hell-bent on being the size of a CD, which is becoming even more pointless. I mean, the percentage of people out there who download ISOs, who regularly put them on USB, or know that you can put them on USB, I think is really great. It's really high. I understand the allure of a CD. I do. But DVDs have to be at least approaching the same level of acceptance worldwide, including third world countries. Okay? DVDs have been out a long time. So to be a stickler and want to fit on a CD is holding yourselves back. Okay? Whoopi is better than a dual boot. Because if you want to revert and get rid of it and go back to Windows, it is zero work. If you have a true dual boot system and you want to go back to Windows, it's work. And it's work that these users might not want after the fact. So that's why I like Whoopi. Now it's near impossible to graduate from Whoopi to a full install without work. Where if you did do a true dual boot, it's just a matter of deleting the Windows partition, expanding your partition, and most of the time you're right there, you're done. But with Whoopi, you're actually in the Windows kernel before you launch that Ubuntu operating system. So you get near full speed performance when you're in that. And it really is a great learning tool. It's a fantastic learning tool. So for them to drop it, you know, it's like taking your telescope you're using to look at everyone else and just cutting off a third of it just so it fits in your pocket better, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is a little bit limiting if there was, and I almost would have disagreed with myself a couple years ago, but if they were simply offering, you know, some different tiers, you know, like maybe like a lightweight install with just the basics, then a mid-range, you know, maybe a little bit more than a CD to include things like this, and then like the mega, which I'm thinking like Ubuntu Studio, just like insane, that's the kitchen sink, it's everything, you know, offer those three tiers, you know, perhaps maybe that's a good option. But to see something like Whoopi go away, it's a little sad. The chat, Ryan Rittenauer, suggested that perhaps, and I haven't tested this at all, we should investigate it though, because it would be good for the listeners to know, perhaps there are some problems with Whoopi and UEFI support.
Oh.
Which would be a 100% legit reason, because the last thing you want to have happen is to go to do the install and have it not work.
Yeah, I'll say it's definitely possible.
Because to me, personally, I think that to set someone up to install their own version of Linux and then to just have it completely fail when they've been told how easy it is, that's worse than having them just not try it at all.
Right, well,
I don't know.
I would say it's possible that's true, but I would say that's the wrong decision. The decision shouldn't be to get rid of it. The decision should be to fix it. But there's a lot of things Ubuntu, in my mind, doesn't do good for Ubuntu. Getting rid of Wubby, if they option to do that, which it sounds like they will, but it's not hard and stone, it wouldn't shock me if they would, because it's not the smart thing to do. Ubuntu, in my mind, should offer, like you were hinting at, in my opinion, a super disk download.
Mm-hmm.
Could be 7 gigs or whatever, where you download it, and during the install process, you're asked questions. What would you like your default desktop to be? You could pick KDE and screw a nail, or take a screw and put it right through your hand, too, you know. or you could say, give me the multimedia pack a la Ubuntu Ultimate. You know, you could have these different options instead of just having, in my mind, a hard-coded disk of this disk is only good for the Ubuntu base. This disk is only good for the Kubuntu base. And I understand those deviations, those spins are not truly official distributions, but to splinter them off and not acknowledge them on the main installation media, to me, in the end, is not good for Ubuntu. It might be good for what they think of Canonical, but to me, it's not good for the brand Ubuntu.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been nice if they keep it around. We are going to include some links in the show notes. The guys in the chat have gone wild investigating the possibility of it not being working with UEFI, and there's a lot more. Perhaps we can even investigate it further on another episode.
Wow, cool. Very cool. Oh, you had more? Oh, sorry.
You want to start with the next one for just a sec?
Yeah, well, I'll first break and say I want to ask people a question. And live listeners, all the listeners, I'm trying to remember what it was before the show. I said I wanted to ask everybody their opinion, their insight, because there was something I needed to do or get done, and I can't seem to remember it. So we're going to move on to the next one. GNOME 3.8 is bringing back classic mode. I will say I'm not positive that is accurately being stated, because what used to be there was called fallback mode, where now they're introducing classic mode. Classic mode, I do believe, is a fork of fallback mode. It allows people a more familiar interface, but I do believe this still wants 3D support. To me, that's one of the things that I did not really like about the idea of GNOME and where they were going. They wanted every desktop to have 3D support. I understand it might make for, in the end, a more alluring experience, especially for the new users. It's like an extra layer of polish, I feel like, that most users don't actually need, and technically makes it harder for this stuff to run on older computers. But I will say, at least GNOME is acknowledging the fact that there are enough people out there that like this experience that they're going to go back to offering it yet again.
Mm-hmm. I will read a quick excerpt from this article that I posted. Basically says, so how does classic mode work? To begin, let's understand that GNOME fallback mode has now been removed. The new GNOME Classic mode has been implemented as its replacement. GNOME Classic works by using GNOME Extensions feature of GNOME 3. Mm. It's a clever system where users can go to the GNOME Extensions website and install the extensions to their desktop to add and improve usability and the desktop experience. GNOME Classic now utilizes the same extension method to implement a set of extensions which pull in features which will essentially make GNOME 3 look and function like the old traditional GNOME 2 experience, but you will still be getting the benefits of GNOME 3.
So it's kind of like what Ikey Doherty was doing in Solus OS 2, he was using all the GTK 3 libraries, but he was presenting you with GNOME 2-esque interface. I'm honestly happy to see GNOME acknowledging not all their choices were the right choices, and they're going back and fixing this as far as I'm concerned. They're literally fixing it. They're at least listening to people, and they're trying to satisfy them. I want to use GNOME. I want to like GNOME. I want to tell everybody else to use GNOME. But with GNOME Shell, GNOME 3, whatever, it is, in my opinion, hard to do that. You know, I really do think it is. And super quick, GNOME 3.8, I believe, is the version that will get integrated own cloud support. So quite literally, in the operating system itself, it will support, like, when you go into the super key, the Windows key interface, typing in a file name, it can search your own cloud. There'll be a section in the operating system where you can say, connect to my own cloud. Put it in there, and then all the default applications will be able to just connect to it. When you do your file open dialog, on the left side, you'll have your own cloud right there. That is alone enough of a reason to make me want to try the new GNOME. I don't know if I will, but I want to.
Well, I got to tell you, and I'll go more into this depth later, more in depth on this later, but I've been using GNOME 3 with Fedora for the past week, and I like it a lot better than I liked it when I tried it about a year ago. So,
yeah. The only stuff I've heard people say bad about Fedora 18, it's about the installer and the partitioning of the hard drive. And I'll say this, if that's the worst someone can come up with, good. Good. Because I want Fedora to be better. I want Fedora to be, I don't want to say more solid because it's hard for it to be more solid, but I want it to be more friendly. Less RPM hell, which it also sounds like a lot less people are finding in Fedora 18.
Yeah, and we'll have a bigger review on it later. But Martin Rambo Obando has been a very big part of helping me with my Fedora experience, and also Matt Enders from SMLR.
Oh,
so
I'm sorry for you.
Thank you, guys.
No, I'm sorry. That just slipped out. I didn't mean that. Matt, here's the thing about Matt. When he gets behind something, get out of the way kind of thing. He's behind it. And he is genuinely believing more people need to run Fedora 18. He's the kind of guy that makes me believe I need to stop thinking about my past experiences about it and legitimately try it. I will say I tried to use an application, Drive Droid, to download Fedora 18 x86. 32-bit, 4-gig DVD, and for days and days and days, it wouldn't download. And Martin had issues on the main website. When he went to go download it, he was getting Fedora 17.
Weird.
Then at the same time, he said his link started working, my application started working. So now I do have the ISO on my Android device ready to emulate a installation media and install it on a device and give it a whirl. So pray for me, people.
Very cool. No, yeah, I just I got a disk at NELF, and I just installed it right from there. And I've actually done two. Yeah, dude, if you got one, you have it.
I might have one, yeah.
It's 64 and 32-bit versions on it. So, well, yeah, get out of your own way, install it tonight.
Well, yeah, and I'll just throw out there again, just because I have to. I want somebody to send me an email, a voicemail, a Google Talk message, a Google Plus message, a Twitter posting, a blog posting, something, a snail mail letter, explaining to me why I'm stupid for only installing 32-bit on every box I ever own. Because as far as I can tell, I get zero benefit. Truly, in the end, near zero benefit from doing my 32-bit PAE-enabled kernels.
You know, I just heard a bunch of floodgates open in the background.
Good.
So,
come on. I need people to tell me if I am wrong, why I'm wrong. And I don't want a bunch of feely stuff. Facts are always better.
Okay. All right. So, on to the next one. Okay. Yeah. So, well, Michael Bai, wrote us an email, 2-3 weeks ago. Actually, it was the episode that Martin co-hosted. Thank you again for that, Martin. Michael Bai was basically writing us an email asking us, well, saying that he has an Ubuntu 10.04 install that he really, really likes that he's sort of afraid of migrating away from, and he wanted to know if it was security conscious for him to honestly consider going to something else, or if he could in fact somehow maintain that system for at least a while longer, and what our opinions were. It was determined that we didn't have enough information from him, so I did write him back today finally, and I'm awaiting his reply to address it in a bit more detail. But here's something that came up today that I thought of him immediately when I read this. Google Chrome is dropping support for Ubuntu 10.04.
Yeah. I didn't completely agree with everything you guys said about old distributions. I understand everything you said, and I literally can't argue anything you guys said. I'll just say, while technically speaking, a meteor can come land on my house on any given day, it doesn't mean that's something that I should tell my neighbors to worry about and put up a defense shield to worry about. Older Linux distributions and security vulnerabilities, if you're only using them to browse the desktop, to me, are just as likely to become infected or compromised or whatever. Because it's like that meteor. Like, what's the real chances of that hitting me? But I do say the biggest failing with staying with something old is you're just like sitting in the slow lane and things keep passing you by and passing you by and passing you by, and there's things you can't install. Sounds cool, can't install it. And then you just stop getting updates for stuff. And then I believe if you try to even install Chrome now on a fresh 10.04 install, it won't even install. Where before, it, like a month ago, it was just telling you you were no longer eligible for updates. So it's getting to that point where you're going to have to either get off the pot or just start to accept stuff like this, you know? And I'm all for letting people be comfortable where they're at. You know what I mean? As long as they understand and they're okay with the repercussions, like not being able to update Chrome. Don't complain to me if something in Flash doesn't work and you will not get off 10.04.
Right.
You know?
And that's why on Martin, we both felt that we needed to get in contact with him to find out his exact reasons for wanting to want to stay on it. I mean, I understand being in a comfortable environment and wanting to do that, and there are legitimate reasons why he may want to, and I completely get it. I would never tell anyone, well, you just need to come with us. You know, we're in the future now. I would never say that because everybody's user scenarios are completely different. Right. Everybody's needs are different.
Well, but I would say you guys said the right thing. You guys said something I didn't think about. You guys said, what is it about 10.04 that you like that you can't find? Because maybe you just haven't looked in the right place.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And I did send him an email. As soon as I do get a response, we'll bring it onto the show and help him investigate it a bit further. Because, yeah, with the introduction of 13.04, you know, I mean, 10.04, you know, it's an LTS, but it's not going to be supported for very much longer.
Well, and they just announced all
right
midterm editions will only get, I think it was 9 months support.
Yep.
So basically, if you're on 12.10, you will have to update to the next release, 13.04, or if you wait till the next one, you're already out of life. You're already not getting updates.
You're not going to survive to 13.10.
Right. So you either have a choice. Yeah. Update every 6 months or about every 6 months. Go a couple months without an update and update once a year, or stick with long-term support editions. Mm-hmm. I understand their logic behind it. It's probably great for business, great for efficiency, great for priorities and project development in their organization. For users, man, that's bad. That sucks for a lot of reasons, because I personally still like, you know, like 12 at 4, you know, I don't see anything wrong with that, you know, and in, you know, if it's not an LTS, well, I'm going to have to upgrade to something or change something. So I don't like being forced to do that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, as soon as we hear from him, we'll definitely report on it again. But as we see some of these distributions that we've been using for years start to move on and the landscape change, we're going to hit these growing pains, and we're going to have to be able to speak to them, because the things we're going through ourselves. You know, like I hated stopped using GNOME 2, but I realized, you know, I might as well get familiar with these new tools to at least be able to speak to why I do or don't like them and how to customize them to my needs.
Yeah, and I'll say, I don't like saying this out in the public much, because it's so easy for hate mail to come for this one. I probably despise, dislike, don't agree with, can't stand using a Linux distro more than Linux Mint. And I'm not going to go into all the reasons, because a lot of people will say they're petty reasons, and they might be, but that's my choice as a user. But the next best solution now, I think, firmly becomes for a new user is either Solus OS or Linux Mint. And Solus OS does require a little bit more learning up front to really be usable to all parties. I know Solus OS is making a lot of advancements, I'll say that. So they're not out of the picture. They're not out of the picture. But Ubuntu-based distributions now are going to be better for new users than Ubuntu itself. I think that's the way it's going.
Yeah, and I'm going to address one of the bigger benefits of running Mint when we answer an email here in just a few minutes. So stay tuned for that. All right. It looks like you have a couple more you put in here, Dor.
Yes, sir. And there was, and when you broke away for a second, I know there was something I wanted to ask the people for, because I said I wanted to use like the communal brain for, and I still can't remember what that is.
Yeah, Google Chrome. I don't know if it was Chrome. Anyway, I got signed out of my Google account, so I got thrown up with a prompt to put in my password again. And luckily I was able to get right back into the Hangout. But good, it's happened twice now.
It ain't just me. Good. Okay. Those happened to me for weeks. Yeah, I just put in a couple last second things, quickies. There's a lot of unique niche tools in Linux that I don't even approach to start using. I'm 90% sure it was Martin was asking me about a clipboard snipping tool earlier this week. I don't even know what a snipping tool is, so I had to literally research what that was before I could try to help him out. The same thing goes with screenshot applications. There are people who like to have an application to do more than just take the contents of your screen and put it into a clipboard. I'm the guy, I just want it in the clipboard, then I'll do with it what I want. I can immediately open the email, hit paste, open a Office document, hit paste, open up the GIMP, hit paste. I can do whatever I want to hit paste. Some people want, when they hit print screen, for a given application to come up. And I saw this application literally right before the show. And I had to mention it because I've said in the past, I believe applications with plug-in architectures by default are much better than applications without plug-in architectures, okay? And I've seen plenty of print screen type tools that pop up and they seem very static. Here, do this. You can save it, you can put it in your clipboard, or you can do a time delayed one. Where this one is called Shutter, S-H-U-T-T-E-R, and over on Nixcraft or cybercity.biz, they have a little article called Shutter, the Ultimate Linux Screenshot Program. And now, ultimate is a bold statement. Okay, I'll say that. It's a bold statement. But at the same token, I don't think there's a lot of forward-thinking competition in this application arena, so it very well could be. But they have a plugin architecture, number one, that really looks interesting, and it has, like, built into it, like, drawing tools, which that was one thing I could think, yeah, I could use that. I would like to be able to hit print screen and then pull out, like, a magic marker and draw something on that screenshot to further emphasize something on the screen. But it has a lot more plugins and effects that you can take advantage of. So I really encourage people, if you want a little bit more functionality or a lot more functionality when you take a screenshot, you need to check out Shutter. It just seems powerful.
Yeah, I've investigated this type of software in the past, and I think it was even Bill Wilson, at least a year ago, if not longer, suggested Shutter to me.
Yeah.
And I've read good reviews. I'll have to give it a try, mainly because I'm working on some things soon with one of the things I will need is some good screen cap software. So definitely, we will check it out.
Yeah, and I will say there was a time, and it wouldn't shock me if Shutter can do this, there was a time I wanted a screenshotting application that was truly transparent. And what I mean is, there was a time when I literally wanted to do something, screenshot, something, screenshot, something, screenshot, and just go with the flow and just do one extra thing to do my screenshots. It looks like Shutter can also do that, to where it can be transparent in the background doing its thing, or you can set it to every time you hit print screen, prompt you for more actions or activities. So this is another one I'm going to keep on the side. So when I have that issue come up, when I need something more advanced, I'll have it ready to roll.
Very cool.
This last one I had to put in there just because it was cool. Okay. Mobile Raspberry Pi computer. Build your own portable Pi to go. It's a little bit bigger, a little bit bulkier, a little bit blockier than like a Nintendo DS. But it's cool. It's basically, it looks like a hinged system where on the bottom you have what is essentially a Bluetooth keyboard with a little mouse pad off on the side. So it actually might be a little bit difficult to type on this thing, but you could, I think, really easily use that as a gamepad, you know, and like on the fly, yes, makeshift gamepad plus an impromptu keyboard, I'll say. But it's basically fit in a loose pocket, I'll say, a very loose pocket, on the go, mobile Pi computer. And I'm a sucker for the idea of having a computer in my pocket. And this, you know, fits that need, I think. Fits that hankering I have for this kind of thing.
I've got to be honest. I think this is ridiculous.
I know. I didn't say it wasn't ridiculous.
I mean, dude, I'm with you too, man. I mean, let's face it. If any one of us is walking around with this, and I'm not going to say pocket because that would be murder. I'm going to say in our tech bag, we'd just be like, man, I got a total mobile device here. You know, this thing is amazing. But then you pull it out. Okay. I respect the form factor and everything, but it reminds me of what like a 1970s sci-fi show would imagine, yes, what mobile computers, yes, look like today.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like far off in the year 2001, and like everybody's walking around with these things. Yeah, it's cool that it could be done, and it reminds me too of like when people take like a Sega Genesis and make it mobile.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Yes, it's mobile. It's only mobile in the fact that you can pick it up and carry it.
Right, it's still
big.
Yeah.
It's cool. Okay. And yes, it has its purpose, but as a everyday device, no.
Well, people's definitions of everyday device is different. Nothing. Welcome to how my wife feels every day. She calls me an idiot doofus every day for this kind of thing. So welcome. Enjoy the weather. It's nice here.
All I'm going to say is I know what I'm getting you for Christmas this year.
Well, and I'll say, if you can get past the hipster-looking guy in the video wearing his beret, showing it off, yes, this is something that the original Doctor Who series would have pulled out of their pocket, and you would have heard beep-doop-doop-doop-doop-doop-doop-doop-doop as they were using it. And then a little hologram would have popped up out of it, too.
Mm-hmm. What am I doing? I'm sending Jonathan an electronic mail message.
Yes. I will just say I am okay with looking like that in public. I have no, there is zero shame in my game. Okay. I walked around with a Z2 Zip It, technically a 12-year-old girl device. And I felt like a man pulling that thing out of my pocket. The battery life on that thing was horrible. Hopefully the battery life on this thing will be better, I'll say. Because that's the thing that kills these portable device things. And I'm willing, hey, so happy. I'm willing to believe a bulk of the bulk is because of batteries, you know.
Okay, so here's the even funnier part. I'm not bashing. I'm honestly not. No. But it has links in here to buy all the parts needed to make this thing and to make this thing into a reality in your own life. All you need is $342 and change.
Wow.
That's all you need.
I don't want that for my birthday.
So yeah, if you got a spare, well, you're not getting it now. all I'm going to say is if you have enough money, you can make a lot possible. I will say, though, as far as a mobile computer involving a Pi, I would love to have, like, much like what we're seeing now with the possible flexible displays on phones, have something like that. Like you ever see, and I this is the only sports analogy you'll ever hear me use ever. It's not even really an analogy. It's just a thing. You know how quarterbacks have that, like, wristband, but that it's like the Velcro thing. They flip it up and it shows, like, their notes or plays or whatever on it. Yeah. Have something like that, but have a flexible display there on your wrist. And you have, like, you know, the Pi, you know, on a bit on your belt or whatever, and you're able to touch screen interface, or even if you had, like, further down on your forearm, like that keyboard there on your arm. Almost imagine like a power glove, but more awesome.
One that actually works.
Yeah, something like that. I think that would be cool. But this thing, yeah.
Dude, okay, look. I understand how absurdly easy it is to hate on this, okay?
I'm not hating on it.
You can, because it's stupid looking. But I love the idea of being able to go into my pocket, because you obviously haven't seen my pocket. I have a lot of stuff in my pocket.
I have seen your pockets, and you're going to have a worse back and hips because of
Yes,
it.
I will.
Go on.
But I could open up my pocket, pull this out, power it up, and hack into your Wi-Fi network. I can have Metasploit running on it and backtrack kind of thing, doing network penetration testing from my bulky, oblong, obscure-looking big pocket device. And I would feel cool because of it, even though I would look like an insane, nerdy dork from the 70s. And I'm okay with that.
But then all the bills from your tailor to sew your pants back together every time you take it out, those are going to add up.
Well, I put in my coat.
There you go.
I always have my jacket or my coat.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I just had to put in there just because somebody literally took the time to not only do this, but put on a beret and document this. That was genuine work, and I will acknowledge him. At least he's doing this. At least he's doing something constructive while he's wearing a beret.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wear a beret out there, I'm just messing with him. You know? They're cool. Keep wearing them.
Yeah, I'll have to watch this video later. I'm only looking at the screenshots, and I'm impressed, I'll say, but I'm not buying it one anytime soon.
Well, maybe it's my presentation computer at the next conference. I'll say that. It could be.
Dude, if you thought I was front row staring you down at your last talk, all I'm saying is you're a glutton for punishment on this, brother.
Well, okay. Maybe it won't be, because I don't see where the video out is, but, you know. Oh, HDMI port out there. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, but if you want that, that's another $89.
Yeah.
Don't know. Okay. All right. We're ready to move on to some emails. Mark Murner wrote in, what I would like you to explain is the Debian versions, i.e. Sarge, Wheezy, Stable, and others, and the whole idea of Debian versions. Thanks. Also, what downloads do I need to install? There are DVDs 1 through 7 discs. Which do I need help, Mark?
Here's the problem with Debian. Okay. Their website does nothing to instruct a new user about itself. When you land on the page, it assumes you know everything. Okay. When it comes to Sarge, Wheezy, all these names, you basically don't have to know the names at all. Okay. All you have to know is old stable, current stable, testing and development. Okay. I want to say right now Wheezy is stable, but just use stable. Okay. The biggest plus to stable is, can you guess, Cody?
It's probably stable.
You win a cookie, a black and white cookie, because of the other. But yes, it's stable. It's not hip. It's not cool. It's not fresh. It doesn't have the new stuff on there at all because it's stable. That also means for a lot of people, it won't be a fun desktop operating system, a great server operating system, but usually doesn't make for the best experience on the desktop. Okay. Debian testing is actually, I'm 99% sure it goes stable, testing, dev. I believe testing is the one that is not stable, but it's pretty stable. It's mostly stable and has a lot of new stuff in it. But you're literally testing stuff. You're part of the beta program, okay? Some things you might go to install, it might install just fine, but not run. But it's newer than stable. Dev is a complete crapshoot day to day whether or not your computer's going to boot. But you always have the latest of the latest of the newest stuff, okay? I suggest people get Debian stable and then add repositories for specific programs they want that are newer. And there's ways you can do things called app pinning that will let you say, okay, from this repository, only get Firefox. Everything else on my computer, go back to stable. You know?
Oh, I see.
And you very rarely have issues when you do that. Very rarely have issues when you do that. When you go to the download section, you come across where it wants you to download 7 DVDs. Now, this installation mechanic media area, what they expect you to do is download all 7 discs, okay? I believe the install is actually only on disc 1. It might need disc 2, depending on what you picked during the install. But that environment is supposed to be, you download all 7 discs, then you install it on a computer that never has network access or doesn't need network access, and that is your complete complement of repositories. So when you go into your Synaptic Package Manager and say install gedit or something, it will say insert disk 3. You go to the disk, you put disk 3 in, you close it, you hit continue, bam, the application's installed on your computer. If someone wants to install this on a server or on a desktop, I heavily encourage them to download the NetInstall. NetInstall is seriously like 40 megs, okay? Download it, burn it to an ISO, boot to it, and it's an old N curses DOS interface, but it's still very easy to use, and at one point in time, it will ask you, what packages do you want to install? And it has semi-simple solutions there where you can click on web server, mail server, desktop, print server, where you can basically just click boxes, hit continue, and then when you're done, you'll have a desktop interface to go with. But it downloads all those packages from the internet at the time you actually click install. So everything you have is already up to date. Okay. That's the way I like doing it. In fact, what I like doing is don't clicking anything. Getting done with the install, logging in at a command shell, and then picking, okay, I want XFCE desktop and give me XDM login manager. Bam, bam, bam. Reboot the computer. Now I get a GUI login. Log into the desktop. Drop to a command shell again. Give me Synaptic Package Manager so I can install other applications, and give me Firefox so I can browse the internet. You end up with a true customized operating system that specifically fits your needs. It's a heck of a lot of work to build up to that point, but you can do it that way, and then you know you only have what you want.
And only what you need, that's not potentially slowing you down, and it's going to eventually potentially result in a smaller download because you're kind of getting the bare bones. You get to build on it what you want. And as difficult as it may sound, depending on your experience level, it's only going to give you a more solid understanding of what's going on behind the scenes. And it's really going to open your eyes as to what is or is not included in other distributions and just make you that much better of a user. So don't hesitate.
Right. And I'll say, when you get to comfortable stepping stones, you can install, I'm trying to remember the name of the application, where you can basically take what's currently installed and turn it into install media.
I remember.
The GUI guy on YouTube did it, and it was called
OzGUI.
OzGUI, you're right.
Yeah, Tim, who's now, no, it's not OS Alt, that's Nixie's new show. I can't remember it either. We'll have to report back. But basically, to answer Mark's question is, try to get, in fact, Wheezy hasn't even been fully released yet. Isn't that the new one, Debian 6 or 7?
Honestly,
am I wrong?
I'm always confused on those names. Always, because they're Toy Story names, and I never saw Toy Story 1 or 2 when they first came out, so they never made sense to me.
Okay. I believe, basically, get the current one, get the stable, try that out, see if you like it. If you do, then start to investigate on how to perhaps upgrade to the testing version to have access to more cutting-edge stuff that might make your user experience a little bit easier rather than just relying on older stable software, which isn't a bad thing, but it's completely your environment, your workspace, do what you want with it.
Right.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
All right.
And I'll say creating that ISO file from your current installation media makes it so you basically have your own custom version of Linux that completely just fits your need, you know? So I can't encourage people enough that when we remember the tool, and if you do option for Debian, that you definitely create these ISO files just in case you do bork your system. You can at least semi-easily roll back.
Yeah, I still can't remember the name of it. That's killing me. We'll find it. All right, we're going to move on here. Jackson, who wrote me via Google Talk today, asked a question. Ador, I'm going to read this email, and I had an initial inkling as what might be wrong, but I want to hear you answer this right off the bat, please. So Jackson wrote me today via Google Talk, said, "Hey, Cody, I have another question for you. I'm currently using Bodhi Linux and trying to fully convert to it from Mint. One thing I'm noticing is the image quality on Bodhi. Everything seems to be blurry and fuzzy. For example, the window borders are a bit blurred. Also, text and images on web pages is blurry. Any idea why this might be, or some kind of solution for improving image sharpness? I've looked at screen resolution, and it's 1280 by 800 as usual. Thanks, Jackson."
Nope.
So he was using Mint, and now he's using Bodhi, but now all of his images are of lower quality.
Nope.
No?
No clue or concept. The only thing I can think is it's actually E17 Enlightenment, the desktop for that. I'm guessing it is truly an image thing, and it's not a font thing. Because they're typically two different things. Ryan in the chat says Jackson needs to clean his screen. I will say there's been a couple distributions in the past that tout their image, how they display images as being new and improved and this kind of thing. I would honestly say I don't tell most users to go into IRC. I would heavily encourage you to go to webchat.freenode.com, which is the web interface to IRC. Join the Bodhi channel. They are really nice guys, and I'm absolutely positive. If you go in, say hello, and say, I have a question, and then wait for someone to say, I have Bodhi running, and the images seem to be a little bit blurry. They might ask you to do a LSHW and list your hardware out. My guess is it's going to somehow be video card support or monitor support. My guess is you're going to need to run either something like Jockey to install third-party video drivers. And by third-party, I actually mean drivers from the company, the closed-source drivers. I'm going to guess that will probably be the fix. Now, in Bodhi, you can go into the theme appearance setting and you can actually change the entire, like, OS. You can pick during install, do you want this to be a desktop layout, a laptop layout, a tablet layout?
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
I would be tempted to ask him what layout he actually picked during that install process, because it wouldn't shock me. I'm just going to say for giggles, he did tablet. And I'm just saying that because he's not here to defend himself.
Yeah. Well, no, I'll definitely get back to him on that. But you sort of came around to my initial thought, which is one of the benefits of Mint, which he is used to using and might try to migrate away from, is the fact of their hardware detection support and getting good video drivers right off the bat. Now, if he's used to that and seeing that crisp image and then moving over to Bodhi, where it might not detect good third-party or first-party drivers, I don't know what driver is using, but he will have potential for a decrease in image quality or video quality. Yeah. My second thought was something I experienced in my Chromebook, which I believe the native resolution for that is also 1280 by 800, or it's the 1336 or whatever. But if he's in fact utilizing the display on his laptop or going out HDMI to a bigger display that might be set to like 1920 by 1080, but it's in fact getting that 1280 by 800 image, in which case it's going to look all blurred and kind of stretched and kind of pixelated and garbage-like. So, but yeah, I completely forgot. And that's one of the things that I really, really liked about Bodhi was the fact that it catered to so many different types of devices.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll definitely get back to him in Google Talk, let him know that we covered it on this episode, and then have him go back and review that and get back to us. Because I got to say, out of all of the Ubuntu derivatives, Bodhi was definitely one of my favorites. And its utilization of E17 in its latest release, from what I understand, is fantastic.
Yeah, and I'll say thanks to Martin again. He's just, you know, we definitely owe him a cookie or cracker or cake or something. He gave us a link to the Bodhi Linux forums, where a guy basically asked the very same question. I have a blurry screen, and he says it's basically blurry to the point where it's hard to read. And it looks like a issue with ATI video cards. I will say, in general terms, this is a very broad, sweeping statement, which means it's not completely accurate, but there's some truth to it. ATI video cards in Linux suck. They are horrid. They are not good. They are not easy to use. They are not well supported. They are not stable. You can and probably will eventually have issues on any distribution with an ATI video card. You might not have one when you install it, but 3 months later, there might be an update where now your video doesn't work right, doesn't move right, you have experienced crashes. Something will eventually probably go wrong because it's ATI and they do not support Linux greatly. NVIDIA doesn't support Linux greatly either, but they do it a heck of a lot better than ATI.
And I can speak to that fully because I'm running an AMD system with an ATI video card, and until I knew what I was doing, I ran into some similar issues. So that's why I immediately fell, as Dor bows his head in shame or pain for me. I like AMD stuff. It's not that I don't like Intel stuff, but in the future, hold on, before you open your mouth, I'm going to say from now on, I'm going to buy mainly stock Intel hardware so that I will have good Linux support right off the bat.
Well, dude, I love AMD as a company. I want to support AMD greatly because they're competitive. Yeah. They're they cause disruption.
Competition's good.
But I can't. I can't in good faith knowingly buy something with ATI hardware in it if I intend on installing Linux. And if I install Linux on it, if it's in my house, I intend on installing Linux on it. You know what I mean? And I'll say the application we were talking about to create custom install media based off your current running operating system in Debian, Remaster Sys.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah, took me a second to figure that one out. But that app is basically the genie in the lamp, the miracle worker, the, what was it called? In Galaxy Quest, the device in the middle of the spaceship that made time go back 30 seconds or whatever.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen that film.
X11 or something like that.
No.
X13.
I'll have to watch that tonight. The last time I watched Galaxy Quest, this is years back, I was doing a DVD player demo at a store I was working at, and it was when DVD first got introduced to the market. People were walking by me like I was from the future. It's like, what? Your movie's on disc? Where's the tape? What's that little button? Oh, my God, that's like a CD tray. You know, that type of stuff. Yeah, and the only thing I could play, the only two films that I could get that were G-rated to use as the demo were Galaxy Quest and Flash Gordon.
Well, they're both good.
I got to tell you, Flash Gordon got a lot more playtime, but a lot of kids looking at me going, what is that?
Well, come on. I mean, look at him. Look at him.
I'm telling you. He's awesome.
I'll just say I'm not a fan of Tim the Toolman Taylor cocaine guy himself. I'm not a fan of his at all. He did perfect in that movie. That I think was his best acting ever, which I know I'll say isn't saying much because I don't like anything else he's basically in, but he did really good in that movie. I thought he did his job in that movie. The writing for it was great. It spoofed everything it possibly could, and at the same time had a genuine story behind it.
No, it was good. I especially liked the little navigator. But how in the show, when they were on the show, the little black kid was like a kid, but then he's an adult now, and he's all like jaded about being on TV as a kid. It was hilarious. It was so funny.
Yeah, and he didn't know how to steer the ship, even though they based the actual steering of the ship off of what he did. So he had to basically relearn everything.
Yep. When it was a real thing, he's like, I don't know how to fly this thing.
Yeah, and I just loved Sigourney Weaver. Her only job was to repeat what the computer said, and and that's all she did. That was her job. And then you had Monk, who was like the engineer wizard. Tony Shalhoub, who just did good. Yeah,
it was good. Oh, and then Alan Rickman. You can't forget Alan Rickman.
Oh, my Lord. Never give up. Never surrender. And I can't remember the line he said. I used to remember the line he said over the dying alien. It was a line he said in the show when it was time for revenge and passion to come spewing out of him.
Oh, man. I gotta look that up.
That was a great quote. And
we will.
You know. I'm sorry. That's the kind of movie I wish that we would do on Throwback Reviews. Mm-hmm. But it's not old enough.
We'll get to that point. Yeah. All right. We got a couple more emails here real quick. Renee writes in. She says, hello, or it could be a guy. I'm not making that mistake. Renee, not gender specific Renee. Ashley Anderson is laughing his head off right now. Renee writes, hi, Steve and Cody. I love your show and the other shows on Podnuts. But it started with Linux to the Rest of Us, and it is my number one podcast show. Smiley face. I'm from Denmark. And your link to Amazon is to Amazon.com. But in Denmark, we would be forced to pay a toll fee plus Danish VAT of 25% on top. So it can be expensive to trade stuff on the internet outside of Denmark and Europe. So if you can get a link to Amazon.co.uk and a Amazon.de on the podnuts.com website, So we on the other side of the pond can support Podnuts all that we can. We would appreciate it. I have two questions. Do you know if there is another file manager to XFCE which has a good search function for which standard has no search function? My Linux desktop is XFCE Zubuntu she uses, or that Renee uses. And Steve, have you tried installing Android on your Raspberry Pi? If yes, did it run okay? Renee Hald from Dalby, Denmark. And then Renee gives us Renee's coordinates and says, P.S., I hope that my English makes sense. Yep. Renee, yes, your English makes sense.
Yeah, see, I instinctively thought when I saw Renee and it was over the pond, it was a man.
It could be. That's why, dude, I'm not.
I don't know. And I didn't even think of that, but thank you for covering my butt as well. A couple things. I was enlightened at the extra fees that these quote-unquote people pay. I mean, these fellow citizens of the planet Earth. Nightwise wanted to buy something, and it was only available from Amazon.com. It was a $200 device. He would have had to end up paying over $360 because of extra taxes and all this stuff to get it in the country. So I understand. I truly do understand that pain. We are literally in the middle, by the end, of completing this request. I'll just say that. Literally today was a big day in finalizing this, and it's the reprioritization thing. Number two, any file manager can run in any desktop. Okay. You never have to put up with the quote-unquote default file manager. They're more of a suggestion. You know what I mean? If you get the Chevy Cruze, we suggest this stereo. But you can get any stereo you want put in there. You just have to do it after the fact. Same thing with desktops. For people who crave full-featured file managers, which I think most of us now do, we want more features in our file manager. We want to be able to send to a printer. We want to be able to send across the network. We want to be able to connect to remote servers. We want all these extra features, including split panes. ThistleWeb, I tip my hat to ThistleWeb on that one. Split panes are good. So what I suggested was installing Nautilus. Nautilus is the default GNOME file manager. The only trick with Nautilus is you have to make sure that when you set it as default in the OS, which I did send them instructions, you have to include the --no-desktop, or else when you load Nautilus, your desktop background will be overtaken by GNOME. So with that one little trick, you can basically have an integrated Nautilus file manager with your XFCE interface. So you have all the functions and comfortableness with a full-featured file manager, but you have a lighter desktop. So that, to me, was the best possible solution for, like, both worlds kind of thing. I did not install Android on the Pi because when I was tinkering with that idea, I found out it did not include the Google Play Market.
Oh, okay.
So I said, you can't log in. You can't officially log into your Google account. You can't install the Google Market. Yeah, it's Android, but that's not the Android I want on this kind of device because I want to be a home theater device. I want to be able to get Netflix and Plex and all these applications easily on my device. I do believe now they just released a newer version that I believe is 4.1.1 or 4.2.2 Android, which I hear does include Google Play and has genuine hardware acceleration for the video. So I might install it now. I'm much more likely to now, but I wouldn't expect great Android performance on the Pi because Android, while I like it, and technically it's Linux-based, it is heavy. It is a very heavy operating system.
Let's just say most Android phones today that are running Jelly Bean, they have a lot more than 512 megs of RAM.
Yeah, and what? And now, over the pond, they have an 8-core phone coming, which I know technically is an 8-core. It's 4 high-end cores or 4 low-end cores. But it's extremely multi-cored optimized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more cores you have, the better Android runs. And in to now run it on a single core, I don't think that would be an enjoyable experience.
And unless you want to hear me sprout wings and fly off the handle, we're going to stop talking about how much better the Android devices are over the pond. Because, it just upsets me. Anyway, we're going to move on. But thank you, Renee. Ray Woods wrote in. And Ray, for those of you who don't remember, a few weeks back, he basically sent an email to the show saying how easy it is for me, and he specifically wrote it to me, how easy would it be for me to automate my backups through cron jobs. And he sent a piece of software where basically I would map out a task and then just hit the cron it button, and then it would create the cron job for me to automate a lot of this stuff, which was great because it was something that I've been meaning to do, is get my sort of my backup situation upgraded and in order, because I have so much more media that I need to store. And especially with, you know, my fairly newborn son, have, you know, photos I want to make sure to back up. So backups are on my mind. He sent us an email, a sort of an update to that. He went to the trouble to create a document detailing exactly what his backup setup is, and he gave that to us in the form of an open document format document. And I was reading over it a little bit before the show, and it's good and detailed. It's about 2 pages long. But if you want to get an idea of what someone else is doing as far as getting backups, because I mean, you know, I would say for the most of us, we have, you know, like our online solution and then maybe like our external drive, which we're literally dragging and dropping files over to. And we may not have a lot of it automated, but Ray Woods went to the length to actually create this setup for himself, but to share it in detail, not only with us, but we're going to forward it off onto you guys so you can read it. If you check out the show notes, we're going to host the file somewhere and you can download it and check it out. And if you do that, please write us back. And any emails that we do get, whether they be criticism or any sort of praise for it, we will forward those back to Ray. And for instance, if you have something to contribute that could make his setup better, then he might incorporate that, and we can release an updated version of the document later. Have you had a chance to check this out yet, Dor?
Dude, this is epic. This is better. This document is better than most postings on most websites explaining step-by-step how to do backup. I'll say that.
And I got to tell you, I'm reading it, and it's like, here's what I appreciate about podcasts and about people that I've contacted in the community. No matter if I'm talking to you on Google+, or if I'm reading your blog, or if I'm reading a forum post, for the people who really care and who have a passion for this stuff, it's like they're sitting right next to you.
Yeah.
When they're going through this. And I felt that Ray was sitting there with me, excited, telling me about this as I was reading it, and that his enthusiasm came out in it. And not only that, but the way he appeared to make it so easy, and it's in fact easy if you sit down and actually put the time in to look at it and go, well, wow, I could do this. Why haven't I done this sooner? Because I didn't know.
Yeah. I'll say the biggest difference is old school media, you are technically a lesser citizen to them. And I'll say at least the way I do podcasts, the way you do podcasts, the way Podnos does podcasts, and the way friends of Podnos do podcasts, everyone who listens is a partner. They're equal members of this community. If they write in, they get equal voice. There are plenty of other podcasts where you're a lesser citizen. They exist out there. If you don't know who they are, just try to contact them. You'll find out that you are a lesser citizen, because they basically will not get back with you. Ray's the kind of guy who raises the bar for this network to try to do better, because that's the kind of document I can literally hand to just about anybody who says, I'm trying to get Lucky to backup work and I just can't get it to work. He just added to the resources. He just added a battalion to Podnuts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think he thought that. He thought he would just make sure we knew, we understood how Lucky Backup can work. He just literally put a whole bunch of ammo in my clip, because this is gold. This is like hollow points, dare I say, what he just gave us, because it's good information, very good information. And GNOME Scheduler, I understand using crontab and doing stuff in a shell and doing this, but GNOME Scheduler just makes it so easy. You don't even have to think about it. You literally click, save, done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a big fan of that app.
Well, I got to say thank you, Ray. And like I said, we will have a link to that. We'll host the file somewhere. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. Download it. Check it out. Whatever you do think about it, if you have the time, send us a quick message. We'll pass it along to Ray. And we could even read it on the show.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, guys, that's the rest of the emails. I do want to say at this time that if you do want to send us an email, please send it to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. If you want to send in a voicemail, please send it into 7076podnut. We're out of emails at the moment, and we haven't had voicemails in a while. We have one we're trying to get a hold of, which apparently Blackhammer sent in weeks ago that we have yet to play. We're trying to dig it up, Jeff. Worst case scenario, call us back, and we'll edit this part out of this show. We'll pretend like we never lost it. That'll be great, but we're not going to edit this out because we're real. Speaking of real, I really want to... When I first started co-hosting the show, I had some shout-outs of the week. I'm going to try to get back to that because touching base with you guys who have touched base with us, much like Ray, throughout the weeks, throughout the show, is essential, I think, to at least nodding and saying, hey, you know what, you made my week a little bit better. Thank you. I got two shout-outs this week. One for Stefan Rice. Stefan, you guys have heard us talk about him before, and he's contributed via email to the show before. He sent us a photo. And Dora was linked to this on Google Plus as well. But he bit the bullet and he went ahead, I should say he pulled the trigger, and he went ahead and bought an Acer Chromebook. Not only did it buy an Acer Chromebook, but he sent us some photos of his tricked out Acer Chromebook featuring Kubuntu, the OpenBox desktop, and the Terminator terminal. Also on the cover of the Chromebook was a Hacker Public Radio sticker, and Stefan is committed to recording an HBR episode about his experience with his Chromebook. We will keep you posted on when that episode is posted. So, Stefan, now that I've put it out there, you better record that. And please let us know, because I can't wait to listen to it. Because he's so enthusiastic about it, and he was very proud. And I got to tell you, I picked up a bunch of stickers at NELF, and mine is still running naked, so I'm going to deck it out. And Stefan and I are going to have an Acer Chromebook sticker-off competition, and prizes to be determined.
Right. Well, I'll say on behalf of HPR, Ken Fallon thanks you, Stefan. The more content, the better, period.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And number two, my shout-out to Tom Balazs. Tom, we mentioned him during our NELF recap, and he was one of the guys that came up and introduced himself to me at the fest, and we had a good discussion. Very, very polite gentleman. But I forgot that he was the guy that flew all the way from Israel. So, I mean, I was flying out from Oregon. That's, you know, a several thousand mile trip. But from Israel, dude, talk about taking the cake.
Yeah.
And he had to have been in town for something else that just also happened to coincide with that weekend, right? Like, he didn't fly in just for NELF.
I think he did.
That's amazing.
Well, and I really did want to ask him how the flight was, how his trip was. But just in case it wasn't good, I didn't want to rehash it. So I didn't mention it at all to him when he was there. To me, he's just your typical nice guy you meet at a fest. He just, you know, came up, said hi, talked for a while, and just had fun. You know what I mean? He, to me, was the perfect representation of the normal person at that fest. The only difference was his trip was a lot longer, and I don't want to know. I really, honestly, please, Tom, I do not want to know how much that trip cost. I will feel I got to reimburse him somehow, some part of it, because that had to be expensive. I mean, like...
Well, I got to say, I know from an experience of a friend of mine, when he flew to Japan a couple of years ago from Oregon, it was 16 hours.
Oh.
So...
Yeah,
it had been long, potentially expensive flight. But regardless, Tom, giving you a shout-out, it was great meeting you at the fest, and I'm glad that you got to attend and that you're contributing to the show via email. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, I just wish there were two extra days where we could have just had more time to BS with all the people. Yeah, but there's always a next fest. There's always a next year fest. So I just hope to meet him and more people like him at all the fests that we go to.
You got that right.
Even scale 2014.
That's happening, brother. Trust me.
I dude, just wanted to say before you said it.
I've been watching Inception lately, and there was a great article on Lifehacker about planting the idea into the mind of someone, and it's working.
Yeah, great.
I love it when a good plan comes together. Yep. To quote a very, very good gentleman from the A team.
Yep.
All right.
You're subconsciously making me need more blood pressure medicine too. So good job. Good job, Cody.
Well, as an extension of that, you and I are going surfing while we're out there. and if that's just surfing the web, then I'm fine with that. Because you ain't getting me near a beach without a shirt on. Let me say that. Actually, by then I would have lost some weight, so I will get into that later. Okay, cool. So, Adore, where can we get a hold of you?
Easiest way, just go to podnuts.com. That's where I'm most active by choice. I really honestly would like to do some kind of at least semi-automated updates on Google, on DoorDoorGeek.com, whether it be little voice blurbs, whether it be a quote-unquote Voxer cast. I do want to do something more with DoorDoorGeek.com. I am not promising a time frame, period. So you can keep dinging the website, and I really hope sooner than later you'll see a change, an update, something different going on. But for now, no.
Well, we have a lot of things in the works. So let's just say that. I'm just going to say we got a lot of good things coming. So stay tuned, folks. Thank you, Dor.
Thank you.
You can contact me at on Google Plus. Of course, it's Cody Cooper on Google Plus. If you want to email me, you can email me to cody@podnuts.com. What I will ask from you, if you are a computer tech, and if you have a business, or if you're a road tech, or whatever the case may be, and if you feel like you would want to appear on Podnuts Daily, please drop me a line. We're looking for guests on that show. I'm helping with the booking. I'll be hosting some episodes. My first episode that I hosted with Max from Maxim Technologies is up for download. By all means, go check that out. If you think, well, could you possibly host that show too? I did a job. I don't know how well it was. I'm hearing good things
You download that cast and listen, let Cody know how good of a job he did, or let him know what you thought of the job he did, because personally, I thought he did a dang good job.
Well, thank you, Dor. But I got to say, a lot of that was just Max being a vet to the show, and me being used to listening to him and to that show, because that's, to date, still one of my top favorite podcasts to listen to. So much good information. But yeah, please hit me up if you'd like to be on the show. We will definitely, I'll send you a list of dates, and you too can be on the Podnuts Network. Please also check out the ACF.co. That's, of course, Jonathan Nadeau's Accessible Computing Foundation. He's helping to bring technology into the hands of people who need it most, those who would otherwise have been left behind by society due to disabled, whether it be him himself, he is blind, or otherwise a motor skill disabled people, or he has a special font for dyslexia in the sonar distribution he's running. And you can sign on to be a monthly contributor for as little as $2 a month to help this great organization bring technology into the hands of these people who desperately do need it. To support Podnuts, you can follow the following links in order to help us with purchases that you're already going to be making. You can now go to podnuts.com/Amazon. There's also a /Newegg/eBay/deals/clothing link from off of podnuts.com. We are going to be making some of those easier soon, but in the meantime, if you're going to be making purchases on Amazon or Newegg anyway, if you follow those links, you'll see the exact same interface, but you'll be helping us out in the process. We really do appreciate it. I am Cody Cooper signing off, and please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is all for all of us. Good night.
Hello, everybody. Have a quick announcement. We have a survey going on at podnuts.com/survey. That's podnuts.com/survey. We're asking questions about the recent change to the Podnuts Network and ways that we can make it better. So please feel free, answer as many or as few questions as you like. Any and all feedback will be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.